It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Brenda Honda, who's curator of invertebrate paleontology at Cincinnati Museum Center. And she's here to talk about the exhibit, Cincinnati Under the Sea, showcasing the world's largest collection of late Ordovician fossils, an exhibit that runs through October 26th. So, Brenda, welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
I understand this is the Museum Center's own collection of the late Ordovician period, which is world famous. When was that period in history, and what did the Ohio Valley look like during that time?
Well, certainly very, very different. It was from about 451 to 444 million years ago in a period we call the Ordovician time period. And back then, the Earth had looked very different. So we know that plate tectonics changes the configuration of continents and ocean basins through time. And back then, North America really wasn't North America. It was a proto-continent called Laurentia, and it didn't have most of its western or eastern seaboards attached, and most of the United States and parts of Canada were completely submerged underwater. So you would have seen a shallow tropical ocean that inundated most of North America at the time, and we were actually 20 degrees south of the equator in the southern hemisphere. Very warm, tropical, ocean depths maximum probably about 100 feet deep, so fairly shallow, and teeming with life, all kinds of invertebrate life.
Can you name some of the common names for these fossils, what we refer to them today? I know trilobites, which are hard to find.
Well, you know, it depends on where you look. They're not hard for me. But yes, they are one of the coveted types of fossils. But if you go out and you collect, chances are you're going to pick up one of two things first. The first is going to be a brachiopod. They are one of the greatest contributors of biomass that we have in the Ordovician Ocean.
And what does that mean?
That means just in terms of the number of species and biological diversity. And then the second thing you're going to pick up, which looks like a coral and is often mistaken as one, is a bryozoan. We have bryozoans in the modern today. They're a little known phylum. Not many people really think about them. They look like twigs and sticks, and they have little tiny invertebrate zooid animals that live inside them. They're colonial. And they also are a huge contributor to the amount of biomass that was on the ocean floor.
Cephalopods, crinoid stems.
You got it, yeah. So cephalopods, these big orthocone nautiloid cephalopods that are similar to squid, except they have an external shell on the outside, much like our modern nautilus does. We're going to see corals in certain parts, crinoids and other echinoderms. Starfish are around at the time. They're very rare to find, but they do exist. And oftentimes with the crinoids, what you find is just the individual ossicles or plates. They look like little donuts, you know, or tires.
Stacked on top of each other,
the stems of these animals.
How come the fossils in this region aren't buried so deeply? I mean, you can really almost take a walk anywhere in the Miami Valley and find something.
Right, exactly. And all the road cuts, like the cut in the hill, anything on the 275, any creek in the area is going to have exposures. Oftentimes when a new subdivision goes in or a Walmart, you'll see them cutting in the hills. Everything from pretty much almost the bottom to the tops of our hills is Ordovician seabed. And the reason why it's exposed simply is plate tectonics. It, of course, was buried under thousands of feet of rock over geologic time. And as the continents verged together to form Pangaea, the eastern margin of Laurentia, North America, collided with what is today Morocco, essentially, the northwestern part of Africa, and pushed the continental edges up. And so that what you ended up getting was the formation of the Appalachian Mountain Range, and a big basin in what was New York State. And then that caused an interior bulge, what we call a bulge, in the inside of the United States, which forms the Cincinnati Arch. And that brought the rocks to the surface. Now, that's only part of the story. The other part is that all of that overlying rock that was deposited has to be removed. So as we became terrestrialized about 250 million years ago, the oceans moved off of the continents, that terrestrial environment caused the erosion of all that overlying rock. The glaciers that came through helped to scrape some of that away, and hence you get this Ordovician rock exposed in the Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky area.
And just briefly, it's fine to go out and collect.
Yes, there are rules for collecting. You want to make sure that you do it on public land. So, you know, you don't want to go on lands that belong to corporations or individuals. If you do, you need to ask permission. Of course, there are safer areas to go. The police will stop you if you're stuck at the cut in the hill looking around. Not safe. Generally, road cuts on major interstate freeways, not a very good place to go. So you want to be careful in that way. It's also, they're not very family friendly. But there are a lot of great places. Now, you can collect a surface collect. So we don't want people digging into the hillsides to promote more erosion and rockfall and landslides. We also don't want people selling commercially the fossils that they dig, right? It's meant to be for education and enjoyment and recreation. So you're not going to go out there and be able to collect truckloads of rock, generally speaking, right? You want to share it with everybody else. So there are great places to go. The Trammell Fossil Park in Sharonville is an example. Caesars Creek State Park is an example. Brookville Dam. And we have resources within the exhibit, pamphlets of outdoor areas and websites and books that you can visit and read to give you a good head start on where you might want to go.
Well, let's talk about Cincinnati Under the Sea, which is the name of the exhibit that's going on right now through October 26th. I'm excited to hear that the Ordovician diorama, which, if anyone remembers it from the original Museum Center building Gilbert Avenue, it is coming back. So talk about that and maybe some other features of the exhibit.
Sure. Well, what's really fun about the diorama is sort of the showcase is that it's actually a historical art piece. It was designed and developed and created by the Marchand brothers, who are very famous diorama artists who have done work for the Smithsonian, the American Museum of Natural History, the Field Museum, and many, many, many others out of Buffalo, a Museum of Science in New York. At the time, they were building these wax dioramas of what we knew at how to interpret the Ordovician Ocean. But that was 60-some-odd years ago, right? And, of course, with any science, it advances through greater understanding, through more exploration, through greater technologies. And so some of the interpretations that they would have originally had back then have changed because we've made new fossil discoveries somewhere in the world to help us look more at detail at the biology and ecology of these animals. So the diorama has been restored, but because it's a historical art piece, we can't redo it. Right? It has to stay as it is. So we wanted to use it as a symbol of the progress of paleontology and the progress of science. So we have what we knew then and how the Ordovician diorama was created and what we know now. So if we had to make a new diorama, what kinds of things would we change? Right? So the whole concept of the exhibit, besides showcasing some beautiful specimens from our world-class collection, is to talk about the biodiversity that we have here, both in terms of the fossil biodiversity. So we talk about how that biodiversity in the Ordovician oceans came to be, some major evolutionary events, how extinction plays a role in those events, and also talk about how the rocks came to be and what they mean in terms of the continents and the environments that were here. We also relate that in terms of fossil diversity back then to the modern biodiversity today. So what does it mean for us to look at the fossil diversity back then? How does it relate to what we see in our modern oceans? Where did these things come from and why is that important?
Well, it's on till October 26th, plenty of time to see it. And if you're new to Cincinnati, it's a wonderful way to discover something that makes us very, very unique.
Right. It's interesting because if you're from around here and you've collected and you've gone creaking and you've seen those rocks on the side of the freeway for your whole entire life, you think that that's actually a normal thing. But I promise you, I have been around the world collecting fossils, and I can tell you that Cincinnati area is one of the most rich and diverse fossil localities I have ever seen. And paleontologists would come from all over the world today and even hundreds of years ago to study these rocks. They are that important. And so we have a very unique resource here that we should be very, very proud of. And this resource is not just something to think about 450 million years ago, which is fun, you know, to go back into that time machine, but it actually has direct implications for how we understand how our Earth operates today and where we might think our Earth might go in the future.
Brenda, it has been great to have you here.
Thank you. It's been wonderful.
Dr. Brenda Honda, she's curator of invertebrate paleontology at Cincinnati Museum Center, here to talk about Cincinnati Under the Sea, which runs through October 26th in the Ruthven Gallery at the Cincinnati Museum Center. If you'd like to see an image of that Marchand Brothers diorama, you can go to our website as well as learn all about the exhibit, and that is wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Robin Carey Allgaier.